Okay, we're back in Sefer Devarim. We had a little bit of a break, unfortunately, between day cancellations and some issues with the timing of the Midrashah, so we had a little bit of a break. So just to quickly review where we left off. We talked about some of the overarching themes of Sefer Devarim in order to get into the Sefer as a whole. One of the things that we talked about was the Mishnah Torah element, which is how Chazal refers to Sefer Devarim as the Mishnah Torah, and how repetition is so significant. One level of repetition is significant because when you repeat something, it commits it to memory. Going over something, reviewing it again and again, moves things from one short-term memory to their long-term memory, and right now we're about to leave the stage of Torah Shebichtav and enter the stage of Torah Shebaal Peh. I don't think we phrased it like that last time, but I should have. Moving into Torah Shebaal Peh, we're now really we're bringing home the concept of Torah Shebichtav as we move to Torah Shebaal Peh, and as a physical manifestation of that transition, we're also transitioning from outside of Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, and we need to take it with us. So we're moving things, we're reviewing things to move it from active memory and moving it into our long-term memory. That's one of the layers of review. But on a deeper level, what review also does is it provides us with a new perspective. And we talked about that in terms of Mishneh, that when you go over something again and again, whether it's Mishneh, whether it's Mishnayot, which you review again and again to see deeper levels in it, whether it's Shein, when you choose something more and more to draw more out of it, whether it's the Shana, the cycle of the year going around and around, that we keep going over these things in order to use that other root, the other word that came out of it, which is to create a Shinoi, thank you, to create a Shinoi, that it also creates a change. You see things differently when you look it over. And so we need to see Torah from a different perspective as we're about to go into Eretz Yisrael in this final book, in this final station after the 40 years. And we said, well, why did we wait 40 years? If Moshe Rabbeinu had this new perspective to share with them, why not share it earlier? And we talked about the fact that it was 40 years later, the significance of the number 40 as being a number of maturation, a number of change in and of itself, and that that's why this one of these very critical psukim to Sefer Devarim, which appears at the end of Parshat Ki Tavo, we looked at last time, which is V'lo Natan Hashem, I believe I'm quoting this correctly, V'lo Natan Hashem Lev Ladat Ve'inayim Lirot Ve'oznayim Lishmoa Ara Yom Hazeh, that God didn't give them the ability to do that until now, until 40 years later. Now they have this ability to see this new perspective, and what we were left with was the question was, okay, great, we need to review. Moshe Rabbeinu is drawing forth new wellsprings of Torah. Ho'il Moshe Be'erat HaTorah Hazot Le'mor. He's bringing forth new wellsprings, and he's sharing this new perspective with a generation that now can hear it, this new generation that rose up, that's the door by Haaretz, on the brink of Eretz Yisrael, ready to go in, and they're ready to see this new reality of Torah. What's the only thing we didn't talk about? We said last time, what did we talk about yet? What is Moshe telling them? What is this new perspective? What is this new wellspring of Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu is bringing out? What is it that he had to wait 40 years to tell them? What is Sefer Devarim? We now know why Sefer Devarim, but what is Sefer Devarim? What's the content of that? And the one name of Sefer Devarim we actually haven't addressed yet is the most primary name of Sefer Devarim, which is Devarim. We haven't talked about Devarim yet, and that is going to be our topic for today. Sorry for the longer review, but like it has been, I think, a week and a half, so that'll get us back focused onto where we were at and how we're going to go forward. This question is exceptionally significant, not just because this book is different and we're going to talk a lot about Dibor in general and why is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking this whole book and where is it coming from. There's a very fundamental question about this as well if we think back to the narrative of Torah, because we always think back to the narrative of Torah, which is the first time we met Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a very significant question. The first time we meet Moshe Rabbeinu, not the first time, within the context of the first time we meet him, within Sefer Shmot, when we meet Moshe Rabbeinu, God comes to him and says, you should be the leader of the Jewish people. And Moshe says, no. Yes. He says, no. And one of the reasons he says why he shouldn't be the one to lead the Jewish people, says Eliora, is Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm not a man of words. But not only does he not out of words, I don't want art scroll. I want Chumash. I want text. What is the Lashon that's used there? Lo Ishtivarim Anochi. It's like you read it off the sheet in source number 3. Lo Ishtivarim Anochi. Yes, here. Source number 3 on your sheets from Shmot Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud. Vayor Moshe El Hashem Biaduni Lo Ishtivarim Anochi. It's crazy. Moshe defines himself, not just as a person who can't speak, but uses that word, Lo Ishtivarim. I'm not a person of Devarim. And we also have to answer, then how is he giving over a whole fifth of Torah, which he talks almost the entire time, and the name of the book is Devarim? Moshe, you know what happened? What happened between little Moshe, back there with the sheep at the bush, And 40 years later, Moshe, standing at the border of Israel, what happened to allow him to be able to give over the Sefer? Fundamental question that has to be answered. So today we're going to go into the wonderfully exciting, deep world of what Dibor is. What Dibor is really about. To do that, we're going to use a deeper paradigm that's used by deeper sources in Chazal, which discusses the way that anything is brought into the world. And it's generally a four-stage process. It's discussed as a four-stage process, starting from the most internal. First stage is Ratzon. The second stage is Machshava. The next stage is Dibor. And the next stage is Maaseh. These are the four stages of bringing anything out into the world. How so? Everything has to start with a ratzon. Everything has to start with an initial thought. If there's no origin point within me, if there's no origin point at all, then nothing can go from there. There's no starting place. And because of that, this is that origin point. We're not going to talk about this ratzon so much. We're going to focus on the lower three. Once I have that initial ratzon, then it goes into my mind and I start thinking about it. And I have this free flow, this flood of ideas that washes over me. And I have an idea of what I want to do. And I think about it, and I turn it, and I work on it, and I have this idea. Skipping over Dibor, the final stage is, of course, going to be Maaseh. I'm going to go, and I'm going to actually do that thing that I wanted to do. I think in the past we used an example of, like, let's say, making a house. So first I have this idea that, okay, I want to build a house. Then I think about, okay, well, what do I want the house to be like? And then I have to actually go and get the contractor, or chop down the wood, or whether I'm doing it myself or somewhere else, then I got to actually do and make it happen in this world. Initial thought, or initial, the source, that ratzon, that initial desire, but the machshava, dibor v'maaseh. The thought, moving to dibor, moving to maaseh. Now why, what is this middle stage of dibor? What does dibor do? What's the function of dibor? So I want to try to describe why it's important in between these two, because there has to be something when it goes from one to the other where it's going to start making it get there in a way that's going to arrive. Does that make sense? No? You ever have that moment where you are so clear in your mind what you're trying to say but you can't find the words? That's dibor. Even though we don't often think about it like that, that was an example, by the way, you just experienced it. That very often, we don't think about it this way, but dibor is that transition piece where I have an idea in my mind. And I'm desperately trying, I want to share it with someone. And the first stage of trying to actually concretize that idea, that comes through dibor. What's the difference between machshava and maaseh? Machshava in the mind, machshava, it's all internal. It's totally transcendent. There's no physicality to it at all. It's not defined. It's ephemeral. Maaseh, it has specific borders and boundaries. It's active. It's finite. It's physical. The bridge between the spiritual and the physical. The bridge between the internal and the external. The bridge between the undefined primordial state of something and its active final manifestation, that's dibor. It's moving from the place of saying, I want to tell you, but I can't find the words, to forcing myself to cut it and give it finite words, begin to give it actual form in a reality of dibor that allows me to get to the maaseh. It's part of the process of making something real, of beginning to limit it, of beginning to make it more physical, beginning to manifest in the outside world. That's how dibor works. We talked about this in the first year. We're going to start linking in the first year a lot, where we talked about five and speech, right? We talked just said how machshava is internal and maaseh is external. How does speech work? Breath comes from inside of me, and it goes outside of me. Dibor literally bridges the physical internal space within myself and the external world. It makes that link. It's that conduit. That's how speech functions. speech is that necessary connector between those two. It gives our thoughts the beginnings of definition to be able to then manifest in the outside world. Dibor is that conduit. Questions, thoughts, comments about the nature of what Dibor is. I believe it's even, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure on this one, that even in terms of psychology, that if somebody goes through a traumatic experience, sometimes a big part of that is being able to talk about it in therapy. And one of the advantages that it has is it goes from this huge thing in my mind and I'm forced to see it in its limited context. I'm forced to give it words, finite definitions. Meaning it's all about beginning to bring things down in a way where it's no longer this huge thing in my mind. I'm starting to give it definition and I'm starting to limit it and I'm starting to move it into the physical world. Tweaking that a little bit and therefore moving us to the next stage. Dibor is that which unites the physical and the spiritual. Dibor is that function which impossibly unites two definitive opposites. There is nothing more opposite, there is nothing that pulls farther apart than the spiritual and the physical. We've learned in previous semesters in the Midrash, those who were in Derech Hashem, the Ramchal writes black on white in, I believe, chapter 4, Chelek Aleph Perek Dalet, that the neshama and the guf, the soul and the body of a person, are constantly, his words, at war with each other at all times. And it's impossible that those two sides, that the spiritual and physical, can unite. We've quoted this before in the past, but we reflect the impossibility of the union of the spiritual and the physical every single day. Where? Excellent. You can be like Eliezer too if you stick in the Midrash long enough. Internalize the Torah. Go over it again and again and again and find new things. We're going to bring out a new layer in that piece. So to quote Eliora, quoting the Mishnah Berurah, so when the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Vav talks about the bracha of Asher Yatzar, very oddly, and it's quite an open question and also a discussion for another time, there are some answers, but it's like none of them are, to my mind, exceptionally compelling. It's very interesting. The Shulchan Aruch tells you all the brachot that you have to make all throughout the day. But he, on Asher Yatzar, not only does he tell you to say Asher Yatzar, he spends the time to translate every word. What does every phrase of Asher Yatzar mean? What's its intention? And that's the bulk of Siman Vav, the sixth Siman of Shulchan Aruch. And he gets to the end of the bracha, which is Rofei Kol Basar, who heals all flesh, Umafli La'asot, and does wonders. And in context, seemingly the wonder that God does is that he allows the body to function. It's a wonder in and of itself. And the Ramah stops the Shulchan Aruch. He doesn't really, because they weren't actually in dialogue. But he then jumps in for the first time. And the Ramah says, wait, I have a different understanding of what the words Umafli La'asot mean every time we say Asher Yatzar. Source number 4 in your sheets. The Od Yesh Lifareish, says the Ramah, Shemafli La'asot B'ma Sheshomer Ruach HaAdam B'Kirbo, that God keeps the spirit of man inside of him. V'kosher Davar Ruchani B'Davar Gashmi. And that he unifies the spiritual and the physical. He unifies our body and our soul. That's Umafli La'asot. And that's why, according to many minhagim, there are two different minhagim, but according to many minhagim, one should, and I would advocate for this, when you finish saying in the morning Asher Yatzar, and you say Umafli La'asot, you're immediately supposed to start saying Elokai Neshama. Because through the words Mafli La'asot, through the words of wonderment, you're unifying the bracha on the body and the bracha on the soul. And we're enacting the impossible union of Umafli La'asot, of bringing those two together every morning when we unite those two brachot. Because it's impossible. It's a wonderment. It's a pele. And that pele is reflected in Dibor, which is the bridging, the union of the spiritual and the physical. So much, so take a look at this. The Rambam, Maimonides, when he wrote his Mishnah Torah, not the one we're learning, when he wrote his Mishnah Torah, right, to Moshe's, both writing Mishnah Torah is also something to think about. Obviously, there's intention there. When the Rambam wrote his Mishnah Torah, all of the laws that involve Nidarim and speech and all these things are in a Sefer. Do you ever know what that Sefer is called? Hafla'ah. Milashon Pele. the Rambam defines speech as being a pella. Where did he get that from? We got it from Torah, because what we're saying is true. But he's drawing out from Psukim. Take a look at source number 5. Vayikra chav bet chav aleph. V'ish ki yakriv zevach shlamim la'Hashem. When a person comes to bring a korban, lifalei neder, to make a neder. But what word does it use to say a neder, to make a neder? Lifalei. Mazel lifalei, pella means a wonderment. Says Rashi, and so many Rishonim on the spot, but I brought Rashi, he's the most classic, and he was the first one that was there. It was just, everybody, he's not the only one to say this. Lifalei meter means, lehafrish bidiburo. Pella means dibor. Because dibor is a pella. That's how Chumash is it, that's how it's translated, that's why the Rambam calls it Seder Hafla. And thinking about this, it brought me back to a concept that unfortunately often gets quoted too often and cheapened. And I want to add some weight to it, and it just made me see it in a different way and really focus in on where it appears in the words. Take a look at the next source, and some of this may be familiar, some of you may be familiar with this, but like, see the weight of this now. When God creates man, it says as follows in source number 7, Bereshit Perek Bet Pasuk Zayin. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et ha'adam afar min ha'adama. When God creates man, it says that he created him as dust of the earth. V'yipach be'apav nishmat chayim. And he put in through his nostrils, through his nose, a nishmat chayim, a nishama, life. What are the two counterbalances in that pasuk? I even gave you a break, I think, in the underline to emphasize it. Before then, we didn't read the end of the pasuk yet. There's an emphasis on the fact that mankind is stuck between these two realities, these adjoining of these two realities. On the one hand, he is definitively afar min ha'adama. We are physical. We are afar min ha'adama. And on the flip side, impossibly, God is kosher davaru chaniv davar gashmi. V'yipach be'apav nishmat chayim. And the result of the impossible union of the spiritual and the physical, of a physical body and a spiritual soul, the result of that is v'yihi ha'adam l'nefesh chaya. Man is therefore this living creature having both of these elements. And many people quote this, the following unklus. And I didn't even realize, because I've heard the Vartorah so many times, and people actually usually put the words of Unklus on the wrong part of the pasuk. Unklus translates the words, Vayihi ha'adam l'nefesh chaya. Then, once he had a physical body and a spiritual soul, he then became a nefesh chaya. He became a living being. How does Unklus define what a living being is? The underlined? Source 8, V'havet ba'adam l'ruach memalala. Man therefore became a speaking creature. And when you think about it, that it's dafka on those words that Unklus explains it that way. Meaning, once God impossibly unified the physical and the spiritual, what that gives birth to, what that produces, is a speaking creature, because speech is a reflection of the union of the physical and the spiritual. It's a reflection of that impossibility. It is that pella. It's that uniquely human quality. Other species can communicate in basic ways. There is no other species that can speak. It is a uniquely human trait. It's what defines us. Because it reflects the core of who and what we are, which are the only things which have both a guf and a neshama, the only things that have both a physical side and a spiritual side. And even though other creatures may be alive, the nature of what gives them life is entirely different. And you can also, Ayin Sham and the Ramchal as well, Derech Hashem, Chelek Aleph, Perek Dalet, where he talks about the fact that the life of other creatures is entirely different than a human being. It's the thinnest strand, so to speak, of spirituality. But the full union of the spiritual and the physical, that only exists in humanity. Only in humanity. And that's the wonderment of speech. That's this incredible concept of speech. Speech is a wonder. Speech is our capacity to take who we are and what we are and what we're thinking and what we're desiring and what we're striving towards. That we can take everything that's inside of us and start bringing it out and defining it and bringing it down. It's what's so essential to who and what we are. Sefer Devarim is about creating that bridge. It's about creating the bridge between the physical and the spiritual. I want to answer the question that we asked originally before we take it to its final stage. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu Lo Ish Devarim Anochi in Shmot and now able to give over Sefer Devarim? Where did he get the capacity to speak, and what does it mean? What does it mean that he wasn't able to speak in the first place? It means that Moshe Rabbeinu had a speech impediment. So yes, there is a Midrash Chazal that he put his hand on hot coals and put it in his mouth, and therefore he couldn't speak 100%, and that needs to be understood. But on a deeper level, Moshe Rabbeinu had a speech. What does that mean? And the deeper Svarim bring out this very point. Moshe Rabbeinu looks at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, HaKadosh, he's God. I'm not a Dibor guy. I'm living in the spiritual realms. I don't know how to give words to things. I don't know how to bring this into the physical world. I am totally in a different place. And not in the way that was Gaiva. Dick, he was the Ish Anav Ma'od Mikol Adama Sharpin Adama. He was not out of Gaiva. He said, listen, I'm honestly an inherently spiritual person. I am a Machshava person. I am a spiritual person. I don't have the capacity to take all of this loftiness that I see and experience. I don't have the capacity to bring that out into this world. You want to call that a speech impediment? Call it a speech impediment. But he didn't have the koach adibur. Because he was so spiritual, because that's who Moshe Rabbeinu was. He said, I can't express myself in that way. And God says, I don't care, go anyway. And eventually has to send Aaron with him, just to placate him, to send Aaron with him to do it in his place. But then something critical happens between when he first speaks Moshe Rabbeinu at the bush and 40 years later in the desert. And that huge seminal event in the history of the world is what we're actually reading about in this week's Parsha. What happens in this week's Parsha? Louder. Sarai Dibrot or Matan Torah. Right in its broader sense, because we spoke about Sarai Dibrot in Shir Kali, but, or you weren't there. I made that up. Fine. That we in we have Matan Torah. What happens at Matan Torah? We've discussed these sources in the past. I didn't put it on the sheet. It's Gemara in Daf, in Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kufiyam and Aleph. Chazal ask, what is the meaning of the word Anochi? We've talked about this many times in the past in Midrash and Chumash. What does the word Anochi mean? Why didn't God use the word Ani Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzidicha Mishayim? Why Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzidicha Mishayim? Why Anochi? And the Gemara says that Anochi is a notrikut. It's an acronym. That Anochi, I should have put the source on the sheet. That Anochi is an acronym for Ana. Ana Nafshi Ketivat Yahavit. I, my soul, myself, did I write and give. And the Zohar says that the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chad, that it's all one. But that the Torah is somehow, impossibly, a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infiniteness. Somehow. If Chazal didn't say it, this would be heretical. But Chazal said it. That's what the Torah is. That's what we're learning. That's what Torah is. I, my soul, did I write and give. And the Pashtanim on the page, the Parsim on the page, have to struggle to find another meaning for that that's less Kabbalistic. But that's what the words mean. That's pshat. God's saying, I took myself, whatever nafshi means by God, I took myself and I put it into the Torah and I gave that Torah to the Jewish people. Think this week's Parsha and on Shavuot. That's the glory and the beauty of what we're receiving. We're receiving God's putting himself, so to speak, into the Torah and giving himself to us. The Torah being what unifies us with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But for our purposes, in that moment, so to speak, I mean, I don't think this conversation happened explicitly, to my knowledge. I don't know if a Chazal were happening explicitly. But at that moment, God, so to speak, said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you think you have a Dibor problem? I am purely spiritual. I don't have, and I'm infinite. And I am taking myself and I am putting myself, so to speak, in a finite Torah. You can count the letters and the words in Chumash. And if I can do it, you can do it. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood that he could do it as well. And so Moshe Rabbeinu goes from being lo ish tvarim enochi through the process, through the experience of Matan Torah, he then suddenly is able to produce dibor and can even speak out the entirety of Sefer Devarim. As difficult as it is for him, he can bring that forth. And having gone through that, he can therefore give over the content of Sefer Devarim. What is the content of Sefer Devarim? It's 40 years later after they traveled through the desert and they're standing on the border of Eretz Yisrael. And we need to, using all of the definitions that we've built up over time, we need to review and see from a new perspective, with fresh eyes, 40 years later, we need to learn how to do the process of Dibor with Torah. Because up until now, our entire experience as a Jewish people has been in Chutz La'aretz, has been in the desert. And in the desert was a machshava experience. The desert was a spiritual experience. It was an internal experience. We walk through the desert, and the clouds are surrounding us on all sides. And a pillar of cloud is guiding us by day, and a pillar of fire by night, and food is literally falling from the sky. And there's a traveling well in the desert that's taking us and giving us water through the desert. Our entire existence in the desert was womb-like, was internal. As we're growing, everything is taken care of. It's all spiritual. It's all open, nisim gluyim, all the time. It's a totally spiritual experience where we see the hand of God manifest always. And we stand here now in this Sefer, about to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael is going to be totally different. Eretz Yisrael is a place where the food's not going to fall from the sky. You have to plant. You have to sow. And you have to reap. You're going to have crops. You're going to have commerce. You're going to be dealing in a physical reality. You're going to have to daven for rain. And if you don't daven for rain and you don't get rain, then you don't have food and you don't have water. No different Eretz Yisrael today. It's the same Eretz Yisrael. We're moving into a purely physical existence. But if we're about to move into a physical existence, we need Sefer Devarim. Because what is Sefer Devarim going to bridge for us? Literally the transition from the desert into Eretz Yisrael, but show us how to do that maflila asot. Going to show us how do we unify the spiritual and the physical. How do we take our whole experience in the desert, all of those 40 years that we had to mature in the desert, and take everything that we've gained and now reinterpret Torah? It's not reinterpreting it, you're not changing the Torah. How do I take the lessons of the last 40 years and the lessons of the last four Sfarim of Torah, and how do I now apply that into the physical reality of Eretz Yisrael? That's the challenge of Sefer Devarim. I have to see things differently. I have to see the Torah differently. I have to internalize it differently. I have to move it into my complete long-term memory where it's a part of me. I have to see the world differently. I have to move into a totally different space. And Moshe Rabbeinu went through that transition himself. Is now teaching Bnei Yisrael, when they're now ready to hear it and on the border of Israel, how do I bring a spiritual reality into a physical existence? How do I see the miraculous in the mundane? How do I see that? How do I bridge that? How do I bring that together? Not what is Torah telling me, how do I live Torah? And we're going to talk about that over the next couple of parshiot. And whether it's talking about mitzvot that are specifically mitzvot atliot be'eretz Yisrael on a mitzvah level, whether it's re-looking at stories and bringing new information forth from previously learned stories that we need to know how to live in Eretz Yisrael and not make the same mistakes of the past, whether it's... Give myself to the point. Or whether it's over the next couple of few parshiot talking about these big global concepts in Torah, start looking at the next few parshiot. Bet Chanan, Ekev, the beginning of Re'eh, Mitzavim, Vayelech, Hazinu, V'zot HaBracha, very Musar-oriented parsha. We're going to talk about it more. How do I live Torah all the time? How do I have a perspective of Torah when Torah is not sitting around me in clouds and fire and man and be'er? How do I see that? How do I internalize that? How do I make myself a Jew that can see the miraculous and the mundane? That's the whole goal of Sefer Devarim. That's why it needs to be given over now. That's why this generation can hear it. And that's why we're going forward with this as the last Sefer of Torah. It's the Sefer that acts, it itself acts as the bridge between the first four books of Torah and Sefer Yehoshua, between the Machshava and the Maaseh. It is the borderline Sefer that's moving from the Machshava or part of Torah to the Maaseh part of Torah. And it's because of that, look at this amazing source. When God tells Yehoshua in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, He gives him chizuk. Everybody gives Yehoshua chizuk. We're going to swing back to Yehoshua, hopefully, for the last of the three-part shiurim that we started last semester. Yeah, there's one last shiur on Yehoshua that we didn't do, and we'll do it in its proper time. But when we get to Sefer Yehoshua, so everybody's giving him chizuk, which doesn't look good for Yehoshua at the beginning. But thank God, spoiler alert, he does fine in the end. By the end of the book, he's totally achieved. He's one of the people who really, going through Nevi'im, really achieves the greatest heights and rallies Klal Yisrael and creates a tremendous period of prosperity. But at the beginning, everybody's like, Chazak v'amatz, be strong, you got this. And like it's a very sad first chapter if you don't know the ending, because you're not sure what's going to happen, and everybody's kind of like giving him chizuk, but you feel like, me thinks thou doth protest too much, like nobody's got any faith in him. And when in that whole first perek, when everybody's pushing him, including HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to him, first words, so, perek aleph pasuk vav, Chazak v'amatz, be strong. God's like, please be strong. Chazak v'amatz, ki atah tanchil because you are going to be the one to cause them to inherit Eretz Yisrael, and that's not a simple thing. It's going to be very hard because you're moving into a physical existence. Well, for lack of time, let's skip to pasuk chet. God tells Yehoshua, lo yamush sefer haTorah hazeh mipicha. Don't let this sefer Torah leave from your mouth. V'igita bo yomam v'layla, study it day and night and day and night and day and night. L'man tishmor la'asot kol ha'katuv bo, to do everything it says inside of it. Ki az tatzliach, because then you will be successful in leading the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael and inheriting it. V'az taskil. And of course you need the Torah. Torah is our guidebook in life. Unbelievably. I jumped up and down the first time I saw this Rashi. It's amazing. Against all odds, when it says Lo Yamush Sefer HaTorah Hazeh Mipicha, Rashi says, what's this Sefer Torah? There's only one Sefer Torah. Rashi, source number 10, Sefer HaTorah Hazeh, Sefer Mishnah Torah Haya Lefanav. What was the most important Sefer for Yehoshua? Sefer Devarim, which is the book of how to apply everything into Eretz Yisrael, because that's what Yeshua had to do. We talked about this in Yeshua Shirim last semester in Sefer Midbar. He was the person who had to do the Maaseh. But Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer standing up on the mountain to be his machshava, to be his spiritual guide. And he now needs to internalize and literally carry with him every second, not the Torah as a whole, which he does need also. But the emphasis here is on, you must keep Devarim with you, because that's your book. That's what you need to remember, how to continuously bring the miraculous into the mundane, how to continuously bring the spiritual into the physical. That's how you inherit Eretz Yisrael. That's how you inherit it. That's how you settle it. That's how you keep it. And if you don't, you're out. It's the only way to survive in Eretz Yisrael. We're going to talk about it more over Sefer Devarim, because it's the content of Sefer Devarim. Questions, thoughts, comments? I love Sefer Devarim. I've been waiting to teach this for five semesters. That's why I keep talking about it. I love Sefer Devarim. This is the book. Why is this the book? Because it's not just about inheriting Eretz Yisrael. It is. But it's not just about inheriting Eretz Yisrael. And even if that's all that it was, take Zionism out of it. A thinking person who's looking at the narrative of Torah has to see Torah as such. Torah is the birth of Bnei Yisrael who travel to get to Eretz Yisrael. That's actually the story. Torah ends when we get to Eretz Yisrael. And any Jew who doesn't understand that the goal of Torah is to get one to Eretz Yisrael, literally and metaphorically, has missed the point. It's literally the end of the book. It's the goal of Torah. take politics, take Zionism, take ideology out of it. The pshat of Torah is that we need to get to Eretz Yisrael. One level up, because it's the goal of Torah. The goal of Torah isn't just Eretz Yisrael, just isn't a physical space, even though it's also a physical space. The whole goal of Torah is to get us where? Where are we trying to get to in this world? Olam Haba. You can just take over from me. Olam Haba. The whole purpose in being in Olam Hazeh, the goal of Olam Hazeh, is that Olam Hazeh is a means to an end to get to Olam Haba. And there are many parallels between the concept of entering into Eretz Yisrael and entering into Olam Haba. And Devarim is the story of how to achieve Olam Haba. And not only is it the story of how to truly achieve Olam Haba, it's actually the story of how the final generations have to achieve Olam Haba in Yimot HaMashiach, in the days leading up to Yimot HaMashiach. There's a Masorah from the Gra. Say that again. From the Gra. This is not a source. Masorah from the Gra. Based on the following concept, says as follows. And we've talked about this before as well. We're now reaching back to Bereshit Shirim. Chazal tell us that the world is 6,000 years long. 2,000 years of Tohu, 2,000 years of Torah, and 2,000 years of Mashiach, until we eventually get to the end of the process of Mashiach and into a reality of 1,000 years of Olam Haba, where we switch over and get to a reality of Tikkat HaMetim. That's black on white, Midrashei Chazal. Where are we, by the way? Very close to the end, yes. New? Anyone?
Yeah.
Yes, good.
77.
Says the Gra, every single sefer of Chumash is keneged 1,000 years of history. And the end of history, the last 1,000 years leading up to Yimot HaMashiach, that's Sefer Devarim. So much so that he says that we are in, I don't know if the Sefer was therefore extrapolating based on that, but he laid it out, the Gra laid it out, that we're living in Nitzavim Vayelech. We're literally living in a reality that the world as we know it, according to the Gra and our deeper sources, the world that we know it is a reflection of the end of Sefer Devarim. Yitzavim Vayelech being one parashat. Look, that there's 11 parashiot in Devarim, and Yitzavim Vayelech is often united because it's two halves of one whole. We'll even see that when we learn Yitzavim Vayelech. Two very short parashiot, hugely impactful parashiot that are two halves of one, two halves of one whole. We're living in Yitzavim Vayelech. And therefore, coming back to something we talked about all the way at the beginning, Sefer Devarim is, it's so tragic. It's so tragic that Sefer Devarim is probably the least learned Sefer of Chumash. And I think that it's no accident that the world, this is my own perspective, that the world is designed in such a way where the world fights us from learning it. Because the Yitzhar is pulling us away from understanding what we need to know at this critical point in history. And so it happens to be that school's out, and camps on, and seminaries out, and yeshivas out, and even yeshivas are on yeshiva break, always during Sefer Devarim. It's always the lost Sefer. It's a struggle to find complete sets of ideas on Sefer Devarim, even in Sefer Hashkafa. It's always the thinnest one. We're being pulled away from it because it's what we need to know. We live in such a physical world right now. And in order to achieve what we need to achieve in this stage of history, we need the messages of Devarim. We need to understand what Devarim is. When my Rebbe told, Rebbe Ravamos told a relative of his who was a rabbi in America that he was teaching Sefer Devarim. This was in a shir in 5764, I think. So this was a while ago, but it happened. And that's the set that I have, so I listen to 5764 all the time. And his family member, who was a rabbi in the States, said, Sefer Devarim, what is there to teach? And he didn't mean it in a mean way. But think about your experiences with Sefer Devarim. Do you know what happens in each parsha? Do you know what the story or the narrative... When I build a narrative for Sefer Shemot with you based on my Rebbe's Torahs, okay, so we can understand very clear Yetziat Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, Mishkan, and that there needs to be something that unifies those three as three stages in a process. What's Devarim? Lots of psukim of Moshe Rabbeinu going on and on and on. Love God, fear God, do some mitzvot, covenants, blessings, songs, good. We have no idea. And I think that it is especially important for this generation to be learning this sefer. And as we continue to learn it, you will see that these are the messages perhaps that are the most lost from our generation. In a world that's so physical, that's so bereft of the spiritual, where even the spiritual in this world struggles to have any connection to the physical. It seems to be one or the other, but uniting the two is certainly impossible. Even if we see constant pulls in Judaism in both directions. And a failure on both sides. And the way to inherit Olam Haba is through understanding the message of Devarim. It's how we inherit what's referred to in the text as Eretz HaChaim. What is Eretz HaChaim? So some will say that Eretz HaChaim means Eretz Yisrael, and some will say it means Olam Haba. Because two sides of the same coin. Sefer Devarim is the book that's on the border. The border of Eretz Yisrael, literally. Metaphorically, the border of what's to come next, Olam Haba. And these are what we need to know. These messages of Moshe Rabbeinu. We kidded around about it at the beginning, but now to make it very serious. If there was anybody you would ever want to hear a drasha from ever in the world, it should be Moshe. The person who stood at Har Sinai and got the Torah. The person who for 40 years spoke to God face to face. And these were the last 37 days of his life where he said, you want to live Torah? You want to live Torah, which happens to be called Torah Moshe, the Torah that's a reflection of everything that I'm bringing to the table. I am, for the next 37 days, and through this book, going to tell you everything you need to know about how to make Torah real. How to live it where you need to live it, which is in Eretz Yisrael. To live it where you need to live it, which is in Olam Haba, to get you to Olam Haba, which is to get you to Olam Haba. That's the sefer we're learning. That's the content. That's the reframing of Torah coming through Moshe Rabbeinu. It's an incredibly exciting sefer. An overlooked sefer. Misunderstood sefer. And such a critical sefer. And I'm so excited to dive into it with you all going forward over the course of the semester. That's what Sefer Devarim is going to set out to accomplish. That's the tall order that we have to accomplish over the next 3 months or so. And Bezrat Hashem, together we will start to engage Sefer Devarim. Starting next time, we'll start looking at the text itself, the first stories that are retold in the beginning of Parshat Devarim, and begin to understand what Moshe Rabbeinu needs us to know to both inherit Bezrat Hashem Eretz Yisrael, Eretz HaChaim, Olam Haba.